So I wanted to start with the story of how I prepared this talk. there's a way I go about it whenever I have to give a talk, and I don't often think very much about it. It's just sort of what I do. And especially if I have a few weeks' notice, like I did in a case like this, I spend a few weeks before a talk just kind of gathering source material from whatever happens in my life. Maybe things that remind me, in this case, habits that I notice in myself, but also conversations that I have. And it's remarkable how much the thing you're thinking about comes up in conversations. And also, of course, from the other talks that have been given at Sims, and the ideas that have come to me from that. So this is all part of my process, and as per that process, I spent a few minutes last night just kind of going through the ideas. Like, I put them all in a digital notebook, just kind of jotting them down as they come. And so last night I spent probably about 15 minutes just going through and moving the ideas around, saying, maybe not this one. Oh, this one comes up front, all of that kind of stuff. And I had this plan. And this is, again, something this is what I would normally do, to sit and to spend some time reading one particular book that I love on this topic, habits. That's actually written by Hugh Byrne, a Dharma teacher in Washington, D.C. And so I had this plan, and I went through, I did all the stuff, I spent my 15 minutes organizing my notes, and then I settled down with my book, and I thought the perfect time would be, I often spend some time reading with my son before we go to bed. So I was going to do that, but then he wanted to play during that time. He had all this energy in him, so instead we played. And so I was going to wait for him to kind of settle down, go to sleep, and then open my book and read it. And it turned out that he couldn't fall asleep, and he really wanted me to do a body scan meditation. And so I said, okay. And so we did that, and it lasted much longer than I expected because, he had some energy in him. And so I ended up not reading the book, and it was kind of a disruption of my pattern, right? So I was kind of sleeping with this feeling like, there are all the things I wanted to do before this talk, and I didn't really get to do them. Things haven't gone as planned. And I ended up sleeping a little later than I would have otherwise also. But then the rest of my process, I was right on schedule. The next part of my process is, it's always the morning of a talk that I actually do any kind of real preparation, because that's just how I do it. And it's how it has always worked for me. And so in a way, I've been reluctant to mess with that. Because it works okay, and maybe it doesn't work perfectly, but my goodness, the risk is that everything falls apart, right? If I don't follow my process and do the things the way I've done them in the past. So I started by doing that, and I always start by sitting and meditating. So I sat for my 15 minutes at the beginning of my process of writing the talk this morning, and all these, little bursts of panic kept hitting me. And, they'd be things like, oh my goodness, I haven't thought about the length of the talk. It has to be 25 minutes. And have I been thinking 25 minutes? Have I been thinking 15 minutes? Have I been thinking 45 minutes? What's the actuality of my talk? This is something I've forgotten. And, that thought will go away. And then another one will come up, and they come in these waves. And because I was sitting and meditating, I kind of noticed that those waves are part of they're part of the process too. They're part of the habit. We always have these waves, or I do. I have these, little bursts of panic before a talk, and they almost feel like, they're helpful, right? They're like trying to remind you of all those things you need to get done that have to be on the to-do list. Another time I have this that might be familiar to other people is when I'm leaving for a trip. As soon as I get into the car, I have this certainty that I've forgotten, something very important for my trip, right? And that's part of the process. It's part of what keeps me, remembering all the things I need to, I suppose. But in this particular morning, when I had these feelings of panic, the whole talk is on habits, right? So this is a point for reflection. This is a habit. This not just my, conscious, semi-conscious process of how to prepare, but even these emotional reactions, these bursts of panic that are going through me, right? That's part of the preparation. And, it felt really good to have that thought, and it made me feel a lot more relaxed about it. And I was kind of settling into the rest of my 15 minutes of sitting, thinking, I don't have these waves of panic right now. And then the panic hit me. Oh my God, if I don't have these waves of panic, and these panic waves are part of the process, then the talk isn't going to go well because I need these panic waves. So anyway, I went into that. And then I saw that what I was doing, and it was actually very funny to me. At the end of this whole process, I ended up doing this whole thing very differently. I spent a lot less time preparing for this than I normally would. And I took a warm shower. I played with my son, just before this began. I let myself really get into Sousa's meditation. So we'll see what happens. This is an experiment in progress that you all are a part of. What happens if I break my habits for giving a talk on habits? How does that go? So, what I wanted to get across, of course, in this story is, first of all, how shameless and persistent habits can be, right? Even when we recognize them for what they are, they keep coming back, right? These waves of panic just kept hitting. They came in sneakier and sneakier forms, the panic about not panicking, right? And, just how much of our lives are lived in habit. So there's actually some research on this subject. There's a paper that finds that we spend between one-third and one-half of our waking hours in habits. So these automatic behaviors that we're not really giving any attention to, one-third to one-half of our waking hours, right? We're already losing a third of our lives to sleep. And then, half of the remainder is given over to these things where we're not even fully present for our experience, right? It's a really thought-provoking amount of time. And it brings up the question, how much of that is necessary, right? How much of that is serving us and how much is not? Of course, we've talked this month about the fact that habits aren't, a bad thing, right? At some level, they're mental shortcuts that we've developed through repeated behavior that allow us to behave automatically rather than thinking through every event in our lives. We can do really productive things with that time that we're engaged in habits. We daydream. Daydreaming is a powerful and important thing, right? We can think about other things, maybe more important things in our lives, rather than, every step necessary to prepare the coffee. So that's helpful, right? Habits can be helpful in all these ways that we've talked about. But there are also habits we form that we'd rather not have. Habits that we know aren't serving us. And when we're deeply identified with our habits, we might not even realize the constraints that they impose on our lives. So I have another story, on that note. This is a short story. And this is a story that Tara Brach, who's one of my teachers, is very fond of telling. Mohini was a regal white tiger who lived for many years at the Washington, D.C. National Zoo. For most of those years, her home was in the old lion house, a typical 12 by 12 foot cage with iron bars and a cement floor. And Mohini spent her days pacing restlessly back and forth in this really small cage, not meant for a tiger, quite that large. And eventually, biologists and staff at the zoo worked together to create a natural habitat for her. And it was glorious. It covered several acres. It had trees, hills. It had a pond, a variety of vegetation. And with excitement and anticipation, they released Mohini into her new expansive environment. But it was too late. The tiger immediately sought refuge in a corner of the huge compound, and she lived in that corner for the remainder of her life. She paced back and forth in a corner until a 12 by 12 foot square was worn bare of grass. So we can see in a story like this, the story of this tragedy for this tiger, there are some lessons for ourselves here too, right? There are lines we draw around our lives that we often don't even see that we've become identified with. And, you know, it would serve us to be able to erase those lines. I'm going to read a list of habits, or really types of habits, that we often feel that often don't serve us, that we can do without. You might close your eyes and just listen to these and see if there's something there that resonates with you. The first is things we do to avoid feeling something unpleasant. This could be eating, drinking, shopping, overworking, drugs, sex. Compulsively checking messages, checking the news, watching TV. These things prevent us from being fully present from our lives sometimes. Acting out angrily, either in thought, in word, or in action, in ways that cause pain to ourselves and to others. Feeling a need to always be on the go, crossing things off of a to-do list. Imagining scary future scenarios, playing them over in our heads. Ruminating on the past, replaying conversations, what you should have done differently, what others did to you. Procrastinating. Okay. I've read those just to see if anything touches you, or anything that you weren't thinking of as a habit might touch you, so that maybe we can keep those things in mind as we go forward in the talk and in our conversation afterward. So I wanted to spend a moment discussing that habits are difficult. They're hard to erase, and to some degree, what makes habits so difficult to reprogram is that our identities are in some sense a collection of habits, right? Our patterns feel like they are us. And so getting rid of a habit can be like a tiny death. So this points to something, which is that if we can dissolve these identities, we can become a bit more flexible. We can reduce the discomfort of changing our patterns and our behaviors. We can allow ourselves to see beyond that patch of worn grass we've been pacing. So I want to talk about two different threads for how we can work with these habits. The first is how we can think about challenging habits, and then I'll talk a little bit about maybe positive habits and how we can develop those. So in working with challenging habits, I think the first thing to mention is our mindfulness practice. Right? A lot of the value in this is being able to erase the lines we've drawn in our lives, that maybe constrain the behaviors we have, the ways we think, the way we're patterned to act. And this speaks to neuroplasticity, right? This is a term that many of us have heard. It's the idea that we can form new neural connections, right? We're conditioned to, do the same things over and over, and we spend a third to half of our hours doing this. But one thing that being mindful of our moment-to-moment experience can do is we can recognize what we're about to do or the behavior we're embarking on, and in that moment, create a bit of pause and a bit of choice. And in doing so, we're forming new neural pathways. We're actually treading new directions, and we're capable of turning those new directions into habits. We can actually, wear new patches of grass in the directions we'd rather walk in, right? So on the cushion, when we're sitting in meditative practice, we can notice these patterns in our thinking that repeat themselves over and over. And one thing we can do when we're actually sitting is this practice of labeling, which many of us are familiar with. So when we have thoughts, when we have feelings that come up, we can name them just quietly to ourselves. Just say, "Oh, yes, I see this thing. I see this discomfort, this joy, this desire to not be here, to do something different, this restlessness." We can name those things. And by naming them, by labeling, we create a certain amount of distance between us and the actions we're about to take. That distance allows us to not be identified with the action quite as much, right? We can start to break those identities apart and release the control, release the power that they have over us. But fundamentally, habit changing is about bringing this practice to daily life. It's about what happens off of the cushion. This is actually developing a new habit. This is the habit of noticing when we're suffering and taking a pause, checking in with the body, right? That we can do in our daily lives. This is a conditioned action. This is something that we can practice. And it may be hard to do at first, and it becomes a habit. We can actually, every time we feel agitated or feel that suffering that's coming up, take a pause, feel our bodies, and check in with what's going on in the same way we might do when we're actually sitting on the cushion. We can even label what we find and bring a little space between stimulus and reaction, right? There's a quote I'm fond of. I might have even said this the last time I spoke. It's a quote by Viktor Frankl. I love this quote because it's one of my North Stars in meditation, really. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. Another way that we can work with our habits is compassion. Compassion for ourselves, knowing that habits are difficult, habits are part of our identity, and that this is like a tiny death to remove these parts of us. We can bring compassion to ourselves into the practice of noticing and changing habits. This is hard work. We can also bring compassion to the habit itself. Once we've identified that behavior that we're about to embark on, rather than making an enemy of that behavior, we can befriend it first. We can sit with it and know that it is well-intentioned at some level. all the habits we've developed are things that our bodies and minds have done to protect us in some sense. They're well-meaning. They just may not be what serves us best, right? The last thing we can do, and this is a whole genre, really, of things we can do, is work on no-self or non-self practice. Now, if we're loosening the belief that the way that we are is a permanent reality, right? If we're loosening that solid, calcified, unchanging sense of ourselves, you know, getting angry in this situation is part of my identity. Feeling this way is part of who I am, right? If we can loosen all of those feelings, we're loosening our attachment to the habits that make up those identities. So then there's the other side, fostering positive habits, right? There's a quote by Sean Covey, who writes, he is the son of the person who wrote the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he writes for teens mostly on what they can do to create habits and also to get rid of habits. His quote is, "We become what we repeatedly do." We become what we repeatedly do. So we can take a pause to actively think about what we want to cultivate, right? If what we repeatedly do is us, it is what becomes these identities, what do we want? If we're going to have identities, what should be part of them? There's evidence that lighter emotions like joy, love, and contentment actually negate to some degree challenging emotions like fear, anger, shame, and sadness. A researcher, Dr. Barbara Fredrickson, she's a researcher at UNC, she did an experiment in which she showed a video to a group of subjects, first that, you know, caused people to feel great fear and anger and shame. And she measured these biological signals for what they were feeling. And then half of that group, she let rest and just saw how the signals changed over time as they rested. And with another group, a random subset of that, the people in that experiment, she showed them a second video that caused them to feel feelings of connection and joy. And with that second group, all of their physical indicators for, you know, feeling those challenging emotions, they reduced much more quickly. So this points us to the heart practices, right? If we can actively nurture kindness, compassion, gratitude, equanimity, we can create habits of seeing the good, seeing the humanity in others, opening to connection. And some of these challenging emotions that are patterned into our habits, the habits we'd like to change, we can actually work actively to reverse them at the emotional state. Those who study habit formation habitually say that consistency and simplicity are key. So this points us to making our practices daily, right? And maybe sticking to them even through a bit of reluctance. You know, there's a wise point when we might decide, you know, to not do our daily sit. But, you know, we can see the value of that consistency and weight that when we're making that choice. And hopefully keep a daily practice, right? The daily practice of recognizing all these emotions, that repetition on a daily basis really has a power. And we're creating that new habit. Simplicity is also key. not creating, if we're going around, if we want to change our habits, it doesn't serve us to create a huge agenda and to try and do everything at once. Start with something. Start with something potentially simple. And work on that. See the benefits of that. Then slowly grow the process. Wow. That was almost exactly 25 minutes. And hey. So that worked out. I feel like that was just pure chance, actually. So this is what I had to say for today. And so as those of you who've been here before know, we'll go into breakout groups next. At this point, I find these groups to be really helpful in just thinking through what's going through my mind and processing the talk. But I know that it's not for everyone. So there's a moment now, if you want to bow out, to say your goodbyes or to exit. And then after everyone's exited and we have a stable number of people, I'll assign everyone to breakout groups. So we'll meet for 15 minutes. And so really this is to discuss anything that came up for you from this talk or even during this month that we've been spending on habits. But if you do need a specific prompt, and that's helpful. The prompt would be, what helps you in breaking old patterns and creating new ones in your own life? All right. I think we've all gathered back. So there's time now for any sharing. Any thoughts that came up during the talk or during the discussion groups that you wanted to bring up? Go ahead.
So I don't have any like real insightful thing, but I wanted to share. I appreciated how broad our different observations were about habits. So some of us were thinking, like for myself, I was really thinking about physical body habits. And then others in our group talked more about like emotional habits. And then others talked about the mental habits that we have. And I just really appreciated that everyone could bring in, I think we all related and recognized the experiences in our own lives, but it was, each of us had different habits that came to the forefront.
Yeah. Well, and I would add that I think that the whole purpose of a habit could be keeping away from something that is not very comfortable to look at. And so when something happens, that habit doesn't work anymore, then that's kind of like this advantage with a cutting edge, because then it forces anyone to look at those things that habit is keeping me from having to look at. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of and I agree with Amy that meditation can help getting to that place. Avoidance, I guess, is what I'm talking about, and not being able to avoid something anymore from a habit, through a habit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so Amy brought up the kind of diversity of habits, right?
And the mute. And
I think Carol's example was a really good one for showing that diversity. You know, there when I was thinking about this talk, since I was kind of gathering ideas over a couple of weeks, I got the advantage of hearing everyone else talk first, too, over the last couple of weeks. It broadened my mind about all the things that I immediately thought of as habits and all the other things that really are habits that really hadn't entered my consciousness. So when I was putting together that list, some of it came from works that other people have done. And some of it was just some of these conversations that have been had. There really are many dimensions to our habits. And I think if we really truly sit with them, to understand them, to be able to choose around them. I think that's something that will become clear, right? And I agree. I think that a lot of habits can be to avoid feeling something uncomfortable. I think that's a very astute observation. We create patterns, right, in order to avoid those things. And of course, they control us just from afar.
Harv, I wanted to share something if there's not somebody else waiting.
There isn't anyone with their hand up.
So when you mentioned about, the stimulus and response and labeling, the one that I shared in my group, which I've just been exploring more recently, is how things happen. There's an emotional and mental habit, and I've put a label on it that this is what this means. And I've been questioning those labels and just like going, oh, even like, well, a really familiar one is anger. And I've learned over the years that often what comes up as anger is masking fear. Mm-hmm. So I've learned over the years to just go, uh-oh, stop. You're ticked off, but what are you scared of? You know, and so I've been doing it now with these other kind of labels and just stopping and questioning, is the label true? And is this, can I learn something from letting go of that familiar label and maybe investigate some more? And, you know, maybe it is true, but just as like stop and go, is this still true? What I, you know, always called X when these conditions came up and there was this response. So that's one of the things that I've been working with.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That to me is a very wide and expansive pause, right? You know, when you feel the thing and then it comes up and you give it the label, and you get the opportunity at that moment to pause with what you've just observed. You know, it's a powerful thing you're describing, to even discover that the label isn't the right label, right? Yeah, that's a profound sort of thing to recognize that can come up in those pauses. Yeah. There's one that's similar for me. It's, I have this uncontrollable reaction to get angry if I hear a loud noise. And, you know, I used to do all kinds of things with that reaction. Like I would immediately assign, a scapegoat. You know, whether it was a person who made the noise and it was their problem, or if it was like, you know, the dish rack and a dish sort of readjusted and it startled me. I'd get really angry at the dish rack. And once I just started labeling, you know, oh, this is just anger. It just happens every time I hear a loud noise. There's no deeper story to it. It also came up that, like, as I was exploring it further, it wasn't quite anger that I was feeling. It was fear. So it's exactly like what you were saying. I'm afraid, and I don't even know why, but I'm afraid at some level of something that's going on. And yeah, it took repeatedly sitting with it and recognizing the anger and labeling the anger to kind of come to that. And I still call it anger when I label it, but I kind of know better at this point. Yeah. Lauren, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I really liked the phrase that you said, drawing lines we draw around our lives that we become identified with. And I was thinking, and of course it went with the story of the tiger, which was pretty, tragic. And I was just thinking about shaking things up. You know, sometimes I don't know what my habit is, or I don't know how to change my habit, but the idea of just doing something different and see where the chips fall, and it just is enough to help me, like the pandemic did. You know, I think that did it for all of us. All of a sudden we saw things that we didn't realize, and maybe we had to let go of things that we didn't realize were habits, or we started new ones that were very beneficial, actually, and it helped. And I was thinking that Tim was saying on Monday night when he was talking about the patterns of thinking and mind habits of mind, and I was thinking of the ones that resonated with me, and I one of them is comparing, and I thought, I don't even know where to begin with that. I just don't even know where to begin. And so I was thinking, well, maybe I just try to shake it up a little bit. The next time I see myself comparing, he suggested you can even try the opposite. Just, you know, if you're comparing, perhaps thinking I'm doing something better than someone else, well, just switch it around and say, I'm doing something worse than someone else, or find some place where I'm doing it worse. So yeah, I was just thinking of, since habits have this repetitiveness, just when I see myself doing something over and over, just shake it up, just do something totally different. And yeah, I'm just throwing that out there because I think that that is pretty tragic when we draw lines around our lives and become identified with them, and just thinking of where in my life do I do that, you know, and it may be very hard to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful idea. I love that. There's such a spirit to that, right? To just doing the opposite, or doing something completely different in response, and seeing where it takes us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Lovely. Yeah. It felt, you know, that's a little bit what I was trying to do this morning when I was in my process.
Of, yeah.
I was talking. It's scary. Scary to do that.
Yeah, I was just thinking vulnerability was the word that came to my mind when after I expressed this.
Yeah, because we know the path in front of us when we repeat our habits. Mm-hmm. We don't know the path in front of us when we disrupt them. And that can be terrifying, right? You know, I knew that, you know, whatever goes wrong with my talks, I know what to expect if I do them this way, or at least I think I do. It's frightening, and you're right, that vulnerability seems like a really key piece of it. And that I think ego is a part of it too, right? Mm-hmm. If we can be a little bit more unassociated with our sort of fragile egos, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Right. That can help there.
Are probably time for one more, and Sean and Bruce had their hand up.
Oh yes, yeah. Sean and Bruce, go ahead, and then yeah.
Okay. What I am asking myself to do is to notice the space before a reaction, which I don't do very often. That is truly an unconscious habit. Because basically, suddenly I notice I'm reacting and go, uh-oh. What I'd love to do is catch that before it happens. So I'm just asking myself to bring that awareness more into my present consciousness.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah.
And good luck.
To us all. I should turn it over. We're at 11:29. I think Suze may have a few things to say.
I wanted to, and I'm sorry that the woman who asked about Donna left, and so I didn't get a chance to share that. If you go on the webpage, there's a very clear button that says donate, and when you push that button, then it gives you options for donating to Tim and Tawari and Sims and the LDLs, and you know, Sims is an all-volunteer organization, and the Dharma, we've continued the process of 2600 years. It's a wonderful habit, a freely offering the teachings, no matter what your ability to pay, the teachings are offered freely. And so part of how this relationship works is that people then support the organization and the teachers so that this whole wonderful lineage of teachers and teachings and Sangha can continue. So thank you in advance for any of your generosity and for your past generosity. So I'm sorry we've gone a couple minutes over. I just want to close with just an expression of gratitude for all of us coming together, for the commitment and depth of our practice, the commitment to be sincerely involved in the teachings and our inner life and our outer life. We know that we do not practice for ourselves alone. Just like our community statement says, that our practice affects others in the world and hopefully can reduce hatred and ill will and ignorance. We extend our wishes for safety, ease, and peace to all beings everywhere. Be well, everyone, and hope to see you very soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us.